You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
It's time for Make the Call, a weekly discussion on the top Wisconsin sports stories of the week. You can listen to the show anytime on the free Civic Media app. Download it now on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. Now, it's time for Make the Call, a Civic Media sports production.
It is another weekend here on the Civic Media Radio Empire. Jimmy Kuska, Civic Media Sports Director here, bringing you along for another weekend review in sports as we take a look at everything that's happened in Wisconsin in the past 7 days. As always on this program, joined by Gray Gunderson in the Northwoods. Gray, welcome aboard.
Good morning. Thank you, Jimmy.
And, of course, Parker Olson at headquarters in Madison. What's up, Parker?
Good morning, fellas. Always excited to be here. Always ready for the Top 8 at 8, Jimmy.
The Top 8 at 8, indeed, is what is yet to come. I am, again, Jimmy Kuska, over here representing Western Wisconsin in the Driftless area. We've got all parts of the state covered, so we can dive into the biggest topics of Wisconsin sports this week. It is the Top 8 at 8 as we, I guess, formally kick off summer now that we've made it through Memorial Day weekend and we head into June. And in the Top 8 at 8, we look at the top 8 sports or not sports stories from the week. And we start with number 8 and count backwards. And number 8 in our Top 8 at 8 to get us going is a football topic, because as we talk about this, it is the very end of May, and why not talk football? The preseason schedules were announced this week. And before you turn off the radio and say, we're not analyzing preseason football on the radio, Jimmy, before you do that, just want to say the schedule came out and it does create an interesting conflict in August. And that is that the Packers and Vikings have both put preseason games on Fridays opposite high school football. The Packers did it on back-to-back Fridays, weeks 1 and 2 of the high school football season. The Vikings did it just for the first week of Minnesota's high school football season. So my simple question into this is, why NFL schedule makers? Why are we going up against high school football with practice NFL preseason football? I don't get it. I don't like it. That's my entire reaction to this.
I think that's a complete reaction too. You know, I think, as they say in many avenues of life, no is a full sentence. It's really good if you're trying to be a more assertive person. No is a full sentence. In this case, why is a whole question that I'm sitting on this, like, and we know the answer, guys. Let's not pretend we don't know the answer to how this happened. Ka-ching, ka-ching. But is nothing sacred? Is nothing sacred and immune from the money flow? Parker, where does this end, or does this just keep continuing into every day of the week?
Does this end? Guys, the Packers are playing on Wednesday before Thanksgiving. Fellas, come on. Right?
And Christmas Day.
And Christmas Day, yeah. Is nothing sacred? Are the holidays not sacred? Come on now. I mean, it's not even just the Packers. College football has started doing this, too. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure the Badgers have a couple of Friday night games this year, too. They have in the past.
They play on the Monday or the Sunday before Labor Day, which is fine. There's no NFL. But then they play on Black Friday, which is kind of weird. That sets up a really weird football week, by the way, for people in Wisconsin, because the Packers play Wednesday. You've got the Thanksgiving slate, and then Black Friday is Badgers Minnesota, and then there's nothing Saturday or Sunday on the tail end of deer hunting season. So it is a really, like, the schedule makers this year for Wisconsin sports teams just decided to be extremely weird. The Packers play on like every day of the week. They've got a Wednesday, a Thursday, they got a Saturday, the Friday's a Christmas day, and obviously some Sundays and a Monday. So the only night they aren't playing this year is a Tuesday, which I think is the only night that the NFL has not yet taken over.
Do we not? Is primetime just too much? I think primetime's too much now. I love my noon on a Sunday game. Can we just go back to that?
The Packers have like, what, 5 noon games out of 17 this year, and their entire preseason schedule is in primetime as well. So they not only do they have the Friday games, but they're also playing them right opposite the high school football windows at, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock, which, again, I'm whining because I'm a high school football coach and that's what we cover. A lot of our stations that are Packers affiliates now have to decide, do we cover our local team or, you know, do we put the Packers preseason game on the radio? Well, the Packers say you got to run preseason. So it does create a whole list of effects. Traffic in Green Bay for the one home game on that 7 o'clock day. Like, all those teams in Green Bay are moving their high school games to Thursday or Saturday. There's guaranteed.
I'm going to break the whining cycle here, not because I disagree with this. I'm with this. This is my spirit animal right now, but I'm trying to cultivate an attitude of gratitude lately. So I would just like to point out that somehow they dodged the international game bullet that hit so many other teams. That might be the only redeeming factor aside from the more reasonably timed bye week, but you get my point. I the only way it could really be worse is if they were in Brazil or Dublin or London. Sorry, Jaguars. It's just always going to happen to you.
All right, well, the Packers have the Maction schedule in the NFL, so we'll take that for what it was. Their schedule looks a lot like Toledo once we get to November. All right, let's move on. Number seven in our top 8 at 8, speaking of important things, our very old Parker Vertical Olsen took part in Tarps Off at AmFam on Monday when the Miz struck out about 36 batters. So I got to ask this, what's the best group fan celebration that exists in sports right now?
Oh, the best.
And if you say the wave, you're banned.
Well, the wave is the wrong answer. I don't know if I have an actual answer, but I know that there are wrong answers, and the wave is that. Tarps Off. I mean, Tarps Off is fun. It's not so much of a celebration, unless maybe it's a celebration of the game. Everyone going Tarps Off, having a great old time.
I feel so attacked right now. I was just about to make a very reasonable case for why the wave was going to be my pick because of the essence of simplicity. Hey, look, here's the thing. You've got, and I'm not going to say that it's the coolest celebration ever, but it's got one thing that almost no other one has, and it's quantity. You can either have quality or you can have quantity, and quantity is a quality all its own. So when you can get the whole stadium doing the wave, irreplaceable. That said, I got to give a call out to the rivals. And yes, Jimmy, I'm going for two this week because you just stabbed me in the guts with those critiques you gave me. The Skull fan chant, the Viking Skull chant is cooler than any rival should be. I admire it. It's kind of neat.
Can we ban him twice, Parker? Can we do that?
I can kick him out.
No, I'm upper management.
It's a virtual studio. I can kick
him
out.
That's right. He's managed. We can't do anything. He's management class, so we can't do anything. All right. Well, I got two for you as well. Jump around at Camp Randall is my personal favorite because when you experience that in person, in the press box, especially when it starts moving, you're wondering if the whole thing's coming down. That's such a cool moment with that. I will give you one very annoying take, too. I figure if Gray's going to do it, I'm going to do it, too. It's been a minute, but if I don't know if you remember Vuvuzelas in the World Cup, they made their way here for a bit. We ordered a bunch for the semi-pro football team I covered, and it was so awesome to just annoy the crap out of everybody we played that year. I kept one in the press box with me for like timeouts, so and then of course I had a few in my garage as my kids were growing up, and they discovered them, and they discovered how fun it is to be the most annoying noisemaker on the planet. So I'm giving you those two this week just for fun, especially with the World Cup coming up here in a couple of weeks. So yeah, we'll talk more about that next week. Let's go to number six in our top 8 at 8. We saw this picture around the interwebs a couple days ago, and we thought we had to comment on it. Aaron Rodgers with the buzz cut. Looks like he's going to be playing power forward for Bo Ryan's Badgers. But more to the point, I'm curious if you guys are giving any attention to the Rodgers-McCarthy reunion in Pittsburgh. I feel like as far as this kind of story goes, we haven't talked about it a lot. And I don't hear a lot of like Packers fans talking a lot about the fact that their former Super Bowl winning coach and quarterback are reuniting a decade later in Pittsburgh.
There's a lot of reasons for that too, Jimmy. Most of which to me is that these guys, neither of them have really been on many competitive teams since they left Green Bay. And so the idea that they might have something left in the reservoir that is fresh and new and ready for the changes that the NFL has undergone since they won that Super Bowl 16 years ago. Let's just appreciate that. That Super Bowl victory is almost old enough to vote. So it's like, okay, if these guys have something that nobody else has, why haven't they used it before now? And sure, old dogs can learn new tricks, but that's not what these guys are about. Maybe McCarthy's got something that he thinks he can have Rodgers do. But if Rodgers disagrees, the track record shows he'll just disagree with the coach and play coach himself. So clearly these guys think they're in a better spot than when last they worked together. I don't think there's any reason to believe that until I see it. So to answer the question, I'll give this as much attention as they demand. And that's nothing right now. Like if they start hot and they win the first two, I'll change my tune here. Parker, am I off base?
No, I think you're actually right on the dot. That's pretty much exactly what I was thinking, too. I'm not going to pay much attention to them while they're just kind of lolling about, but if they've actually got something cooking, then yeah, I'm going to pay some attention. The Packers, I believe, play the Steelers in preseason, so maybe that'll spark my interest for a night, but after that, they've got to start winning for me to really care. I will watch the last game, though, for Rodgers.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah, Rodgers is still going to throw for 4,000 yards this year. I don't know who's going to throw him to, but, you know, it's what's going to happen. If he can stay in it for the whole year, it's his going out party, and I imagine someone like him is going to probably take it a little more seriously than what we're used to. I want to move quickly to number five in our top 888 because I want to ask about any favorite memories from the Badgers Hall of Fame class inductees. There are some big names in this. Chris Borland, Sam Decker, Melvin Gordon, from sort of the bigger sports, but there's a number of other sports represented as well. But I figured that just from the few headliners there, maybe you guys have some favorite memories from when they played recently here.
It's honestly hard to pick one from Sam Decker because those Badger basketball teams were so good in the early mid 2010s. I remember a couple of wins against Arizona, a lot of fun. I believe he hit a three that basically scraped the roof against Arizona, in the NCAA tournament. That is one memory that is oddly sticking out to me right now. Not as opposed to, I don't know, beating undefeated Kentucky in the Final Four. That was a pretty good memory too, Jimmy.
Yeah, I Sam Decker's shot in the high school basketball tournament stands out for me. That's pre-Badgers, obviously. But as far as a Badgers memory, Melvin Gordon's 408 against Nebraska was so cool.
Yeah.
Just seeing him just tear up. The Nebraska-Wisconsin thing, by the way, the forced rivalry, they put a trophy in. They were trying to make this happen, and unfortunately, Fetch didn't take here. But Wisconsin-Nebraska, that rivalry never materialized because Wisconsin was too busy beating him just bad. I mean, 63 points in a title game, all that. It was pretty cool. Let's move on to, speaking of teams that are doing well in competitive environments, let's talk about the Brewers real quick here at number four in our top eight today. We got a couple minutes left here in the segment, and we're gonna talk more about the Brewers at the bottom of the hour. We're gonna deep dive on them again this week because we're at the 1/3 mark, and it's a good time to kind of look back and then look ahead. But I want to talk just in this part a little bit about their success over some of the top teams that they've played. They are 23-12 against teams that are over 500 entering the weekend, and the Astros are below 500, so they can't improve on that record. But they've had a tremendous month of May, nearly 2-1 in the win to loss ratio. I'm just curious if you have any takeaways, guys, from just the very recent success the Brewers have had. I think we kind of saw this coming a bit with guys getting healthy right around now, right?
100%, yeah. Now that you're actually starting to see some guys come back with Yelich and Vaughn especially, and Churio obviously as well, they've been a really big part of that. But I think the big takeaway from that record is the fact that they've been able to do it against impactful teams, which has kind of propelled them up in the rank, in the standings. They swept the Cubs, they swept the Cardinals. Those were absolutely huge. A little bit of drama against the Cardinals, sort of, kind of, not really. I don't know. We'll see what happens in July when they play for five games. But yeah, I think the main takeaway is that the Brewers are still the Brewers. They're not down like some people kind of thought that they might have been this year. Although, with that said, I don't know how much I'm really buying of this being that important, because you have to remember last year, I believe they swept the Dodgers in every game in the regular season, and that didn't go too well in the playoffs.
We're going to talk a lot more about the Brewers coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll deep dive on where they're at and where they're going. Next segment, we're going to talk Packers because OTAs have gotten underway. We're going to talk about all the things happening in Green Bay, and we'll do that coming up next as part of Make the Call. Remember, Mike Clemens joins us too later in the program to recap the week in sports. His style, much more concise, much more professional, probably, than us knuckleheads having some fun here on a weekend. It is Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
We continue along in the top 888 here on Make the Call on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Kesko, along with Gray Gunderson and Parker Olson. We are moving on to number three in our top 8 at 8. The Packers OTAs, the first session now in the books. And the question is, are there any reactions you have to what you've seen in this very, very early going of the current Packers roster? Gray, we know that there are a lot of things happening just within the roster itself with some of the recent additions with the new defensive coordinator, a lot of these schemes. I'm just wondering if you have any big takeaways from what we've seen in the first few days of organized team activity so far.
Well, as you can imagine, Jimmy, we're pretty early goings here, and a lot of the things that we're seeing take place, like who's taking first team reps, for example, may more reflect what's going on that day than what'll happen in August and in September when we get to preseason and the actual games. And actually, preseason's what I'd like to mention first. The vibe I'm getting is that there's going to be a lot of things tried during the preseason. And that's what a lot of teams do. They use it as the final decider, see who can handle a little bit more pressure. And hey, maybe we've got two guys at a position that look pretty equal, but one just doesn't do well under those lights. You never know when that kind of stuff will show up. So preseason is going to have a lot of things shake out for us, but there have been a couple things you can glean, like who might be there until Micah Parsons is back. By the way, it looks like the three knee surgeries, Micah Parsons, Tucker Kraft, and Zach Tom, are going relatively well. Everybody's on schedule, but it still remains to be seen how late in the season Parsons will be back. And of course, he might be the biggest absence. It looks like Baron Sorrell is going to be the one who steps in lieu of Parsons for at least the beginning of that. If you go by those first team reps, again, we might see something completely different, and there's still time to add players too. But seconded on Tucker Kraft's recovery there. So I think the tight end room is going to be pretty quiet until Tucker's back. Maybe Luke Musgraves takes a leap. Frankly, if he doesn't, I think we might end up with a different tight end too going into next season. Otherwise, it was pretty quiet. And the big question remains, what's the defense going to look like? That said, I haven't heard any reports about defensive ends covering passes a scary amount, so I'm not too terribly worried about anything I've heard so far. I'm afraid, though, by and large, it's a lot of hurry up and wait with one major highlight, guys. Trey Smack is having a solid start to his OTAs. He's smacking them, but he did miss one wide right earlier this week. 7 of 8 from 25 and 35. And if he's missing from within 40, that's not great. But this is the time to iron out those issues. He's a drafted kicker in the era of the new K-ball rules, so we expect a lot. Trey Smack is what I would consider the highlight here of the OTAs because he has been clearly consistently successful in a way that even the bystander can tell. And there's not much of that this early on.
So just in, as a good reaction to what's happening at OTAs, I'm curious now, and this will be number two in our top 8 at 8, if there's any moves that the Packers need to make. Obviously, there are you mentioned the injury questions, some availability concerns too with the Packers at other positions as well. I'm just wondering if you think there's any moves the Packers need to make between now and maybe the start of the more formal training camp in July.
Yeah, I would say there are a couple things to keep track of. Most of the players added both through the draft and through free agency were direct addresses to needs, like Zaire Franklin coming in for Quay Walker, for example, Benjamin St. Juiced for Nate Hobbs. So there's a couple direct moves, but there is one glaring room that's lacking a little bit right now. And yes, it's part of some ugly headlines. We won't touch on that, but the running back room is absolutely, no matter what that situation going on in the news turns out to be, even if we've got everybody we might have, we still need more because we lost Emmanuel Wilson to the Seahawks last year. He replaced Kenneth Walker III, who's now a Chief. So you've got that going on. We're at least one running back shy. And if you look at the list of free agent running backs right now, it's a lot of players between teams and maybe close to the end of their career. Najee Harris, Joe Mixon, you've got Austin Eckler comes to mind. So is there an attractive option? Not to me, but we need somebody. So, hey, maybe a camp body. There's a couple of UDFAs. Don't be surprised if a Packers running back, well, makes the news. Good or bad, I don't know. But the Packers running backs are going to be in the news. The ones that we have on the roster, regardless of who that is.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see what Marshawn Lloyd does. He's somebody that the Packers, I think, were really excited about at first, right? But they just have not had the health. And Gray has got his hands up going, oh, God, Marshawn Lloyd.
the guy stresses me out, and I'm sure he's going through it too. He's had the most unfortunate injury history between knees and appendixes and things like that. And now, Parker, I'm a little bit worried because he sat out of OTAs earlier this week for an undisclosed reason. If we've got an update on why that happened, I haven't seen it yet, but man, I'm hoping he had a cold, because at this point, if you look at him wrong, I think his knee blows out. I'm worried. I'm worried. I'll admit.
Well, he can't hurt his appendix again. You know, it's a one-time
that's true.
Only thing there. I too look at the running backs and what's in free agency, and I see a lot of guys that have like 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, years of NFL experience, right? So a lot of guys, as you said, probably at the end of their career. I mean, there's a couple of names that I think Wisconsin folks would love. You know, Dari Ogunbowale is probably one, like, oh yeah, Badger coming back. But you know, that like the names, yeah, you look up and down the list, you're like, well, I don't, other than maybe diehard fantasy players, like, you probably don't recognize a lot of who's available. It is an interesting conundrum that, you know, and unfortunately for the Packers, through no fault of their own, that they find themselves in for running back. I think another position where you might see someone signed between now and the summer, I think any position on the offensive line, it just feels like there's a depth piece missing up front. And I know we had a meat and potatoes kind of look at things, but and a lot of defensive focus, but the offensive line was something in the draft. They only made one draft pick. They did have some UDFAs, but I just feel like there's another person coming in, at least one coming in a sharp depth there.
100%, Jimmy. You can never have too many offensive linemen because there aren't enough of them for every team in the league. 32 teams, you want 5, 6, 7, maybe even 8 offensive linemen. 8's probably a pretty solid number, and there are not 256 starting caliber linemen out there. There just aren't. So if you can add extra pieces there, always. And have they? Great question.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting with the offensive line, what that'll look like. We are out of time on the Packers talk in this segment. We have a lot to talk about in the back half of the show. Mike Clemens will join us to recap the week in sports in short form style. Mike will join us near the end of the program. But in our next segment, we are going to deep dive on the Brewers. We are at the 1/3 mark of the season. We're going to talk about what's been most impressive and maybe what's yet to come for the crew. We'll do that next here on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
We are through halftime of Make the Call here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Jimmy, Gray, Parker hanging out with you this weekend, recapping the week in sports. And speaking of recapping, we can recap a bit of the season so far for the Milwaukee Brewers. And this is number one in our top 8 and 8 is the Brewers at the 1/3 mark. What have we been most impressed by? What are we expecting yet to come with the Brewers? And I'm going to lead it off like this, guys, because I think you can't understate how big the month of May was for the Brewers. They were in last place in the NL Central, which, by the way, has every team over 500 right now, or at or over 500, I should say. And they were in last place in this division at the start of the month. They are now multiple games up on the Cubs and Cardinals going into the final weekend. They will be in first place when the month ends, regardless of what happens with the Astros this weekend. They had a 23-12 record against teams over 500. That won't change because the Astros are several games under 500. No other team in Major League Baseball, with one exception, has more wins over teams over 500. That would be the Cubs, by the way, the team that the Brewers just swept. The Cubs 25-20. They have played the vast majority of their schedule against teams with a record over 500. The Brewers are 23-12 against teams over 500. Conversely, they are also 10-8 against teams under 500 to this point in the season. And I'm going to start there as my launching off point, because the Brewers did such a good job against division leaders, you know, Dodgers, Cubs, playing the Yankees well, like some really good teams as of late. And it's moved them into a position where you can kind of exhale a little bit in a tough division where you've got, you know, multiple games lead. There's only one team in the entire National League you're behind in the loss column to. Just right now, things looking really good for the Brewers after the 1/3 point. And a lot of that feel-good feeling comes from the fact that they've done well against teams with good records.
That absolutely makes sense to me, Jimmy, specifically because it happened off the back of last year. That's what's the most impressive to me, is that this hot hot, I don't want to call it a hot start because it's been up and down, but we're at a hot point in the season here, one third in, the year after they put a target on their own back. After a playoff run last year, regardless of how that went, they lost a couple players and they marked themselves as somebody to, hey, look out for the Brewers. So strictly speaking, if I'm any other team, I'm looking at the Brewers and thinking we got to be ready for that if they're on our schedule. And it doesn't seem like people have done that. I mean, when you pitch that well, when the Miz is doing the Miz things, there's only so much planning you can do. Just like the GM of the Cardinals mentioned in an awkward interview with Mike Clemens earlier this week. But that said, anytime you're small budget and you have success last year, next year is going to be extra tough and they're rising to the challenge. That's what really kind of puts the cross on the T to me, is that it should have been harder and they're making it look easier.
I think what's going to be really interesting now is that they do have that target. You're going to be getting so much more of the team's best because what are they, 4 games up or so in the standings right now in the Central? And that's legit now. We're a third of the way through. This stuff actually matters now. It is, we're getting into June. We're actually saying that, like, yeah, the Brewers are, what, 13 games over 500. This is a good ball club, right? They're going to start to get a lot of teams' best stuff. This week with the Astros, maybe not going to be quite as much of a threat, but I'm really excited about seeing the Giants, the Rockies, a lot of winnable games there. I think that eventually they'll go down to the A's, where, again, another not awesome team. There is a lot of opportunity for the Brewers to separate themselves here because they're not going to be playing against really, really good teams. They're going to be playing against some teams that are kind of floating around 500 more so, right? So they've got a, what, 4-game lead right now in the Central? That could grow by a lot.
You know, and the other thing, the biggest factor in the lead that they've established for themselves is that they have not allowed a lot of runs. In fact, there's only one team in all of baseball that's allowed fewer runs. That would be the Dodgers, who have a payroll that is, I don't know, something like, you know, the GDP of like the 11th biggest country in the world. 178 runs allowed. The Brewers have allowed 181. And the bats have started to come around as well as the Brewers have gotten healthier. So things are starting to balance out on that front. But just the pitching, you think of what the Miz has done. Jacob Mizorowski, you have to see him in person, Parker. You know what that's about. With Kyle Harrison, with other guys stepping up. The pitching, once again, whatever they've got going on in the pitching lab with Milwaukee and their chain of development, and the guys that they find, they bring in, seem to be doing well too. It's amazing when you think about just, you know, the Brewers and the payroll they've got. I saw this week with the negotiations with ownership and players and where the salary cap floor might be, and the Brewers are one of like 12 teams that aren't even close to it. And I'm amazed that, you know, they're doing so much more with less than other teams. And I just hats off to the fact that they can develop under without the ability to go out and just spend a gob of money on whatever random free agent or spend a bunch of money to retain guys like Willie Adames or other guys who have left, Corbin Burns and all these big time players that have gone on and become stars elsewhere as well. They're doing this. I don't want to say with duct tape and rubber bands, but pretty close.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah. I mean, the budget has never exactly been there for the Brewers, ever. Who knows what will come of those negotiations. I believe that there was a floor and a cap proposed from those negotiations. I want to follow that a lot as we get closer to that. Remember, folks, enjoy baseball, because who knows whether or not they'll play next year, because that's going to be a big issue, I think. But right now, when you're looking at the Brewers, yeah, they're doing a lot with not a ton of stuff, but also, they've got depth. During the off day, I was watching a little bit of the Nashville Sounds, a AAA team for the Brewers. They've got probably the first like 6 guys in their batting order are guys that you're either really excited about for them to get to the big leagues for the first time. There's a pretty good handful of guys there. Cooper Pratt obviously just got signed to a big deal. Jet Williams, another guy that they're going to be having come up, I think, hopefully this year, maybe once we get in more of the dog days of summer here. There's all sorts of guys in there that have been there before, right? Tyler Black is one of the guys that he might get called up. I can't remember. I believe it's Badu or Beto. I don't know how to say his name, an outfielder that they got, I believe, in one of the trades in the offseason. There's a lot of guys that are major league ready that are still in Nashville, and they're not with the Brewers yet. So if the Brewers do run into injuries again, which obviously you don't want to happen, but and we've seen them get through injuries fairly well already. I think that they're going to be perfectly fine. Honestly, it's really weird to say that, but I think they're going to be really fine if they run into a lot of position players getting into injuries when you've got so much depth there at AAA.
I think positionally, like the one spot where they can't afford injuries, probably, third or shortstop. That side of the infield has had a little bit of issue. But that being said, the Brewers have the number one prospect in baseball right now. They've got, as you said, a lot of depth at AAA, especially when you talk about pitching and things like that. It makes me wonder now, and this kind of leads into the second part of my question at the 1/3 mark. You know, we've got 2 months till a trade deadline. So I'm just wondering if there's any moves that we make. Is there a best yet to come yet for Milwaukee? I'm just kind of shaking your guys' magic eight balls here and just curious, you know, what you guys think. If there's we know about the prospects. We know that they changed their lineup quite a bit. They're not shy about moving guys around to get through things. I'm just wondering if there's pieces that maybe the Brewers need or things that you'd like to see them do here in the next couple of months, kind of solidify where they are in the standings, which is currently at the top of them.
Signs point to yes. Ask again. Sorry, those are magic eight ball answers. You sent me down that path. I mean, for me, it's that interior, the infield, the left side of the infield, that third base shortstop question. Honestly, at this point, I don't think I would do anything but trust what I see there. But I'll admit I'm a little down on where the prospects are at. We talked about it a couple weeks ago, and I haven't dove as deep as I'd like to since then. But I know Parker has. Parker, what's going on the infield, or is there somewhere else I should be looking?
I mean, I think Jett Williams and Cooper Pratt, I know I talked about them a little bit already, but those are the two guys that I'm really looking at that being the moves. And I know that this would be an internal moves with call-ups, not trades, but I really do think that those are the two guys that you should be watching right now because they go on that left side of the infield. The Birds, one of their blessings is that they've got a lot of shortstops, and they've been able to move those around the infield. I believe Bryce Terang by trade was a shortstop, if I remember correctly, and his arm just wasn't fantastic at one point, so they had to move him over to second, where he ended up being a platinum glover. I would very, very much like to see something with Jett Williams or, again, shortstop Cooper Pratt. He's shortstop. He could move over to third. And I think that actually get some production there because what we've got right now, Luis Renjifo, he's not my favorite. we've got a handful of guys that have played third base that have not been my favorite before. So I think that could be it. When we get close to the trade deadline, though, they're going to be buyers, it certainly seems. I'm not really sure what you need right now. Jimmy, you've already talked about the pitching depth. We know about the minor league depth that's in the infield. What else could they need? What could they address?
So one thing I will say this, I don't think this actually exists in real life, but I would take a long pause if I was an opposing GM at the Brewers, called me with an offer and said, oh, by the way, we're looking at this pitcher of yours because look at what the Brewers have done in trading for pitchers and what they've turned around. Kyle Harrison this year. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, what, 3 or 4 earned runs in the last, I think, 8 starts or something crazy like that. So if they're going to get pitching help, I think teams are going to be very wary of the Brewers call about pitching. So I do see that if they do make a move, it's going to be dealing from depth, maybe from outfield depth to find somebody to play third base or shore up an infield spot, because that might be the one area where you look at it like, that doesn't seem right now. Like you said, it's just kind of an odd fit right now. But besides that, they're playing so well, it's really hard. We're nitpicking at this point. We don't really have a glaring hole where we say, hey, we got to deal with this. A lot of what happened early was injuries, and those guys have come back. Yelich will round into form, I'm sure, soon enough. That'll give them a DH, give them a little more roster flexibility around it. The pitching, even with some of the injuries that have happened there, they've managed extremely well. And those guys have come back. You know, there's 3 major league caliber arms that are currently on the injured list. So there's depth. There's depth in weird ways, like injury lists. There's depth in the traditional sense that they can go to Nashville pretty much anytime they need to fill in a spot in the bullpen or even in the rotation. There's a lot of good things on the 40-man roster right now at the Brewers. I do think, though, they will have to address that corner infield spot at some point. Whether that happens, it's not going to be a big splashy move. It'll probably be a series of smaller moves, but I see that. But more to the point, if they can keep limiting runs, defense wins championships, right? If they keep limiting runs, there's not a whole lot of reason to worry over the final two-thirds of the season, in my opinion.
And that's largely, I think, what we concluded last week, that the decision, like if they were to elevate either Pratt or Williams, it might actually come down to who they would demote and what kind of batting power they want to keep. But like you said, if they have a defensive focus, maybe we just keep things the way they are, and a slightly hotter bat from Jet Williams isn't worth dropping anybody who's doing a decent cleanup job. So like it, anything makes sense. And just like Parker, or excuse me, Jimmy, thank you for mentioning that we're nitpicking, because I think we need to call that out. I think we're spoiled that this is the conversation we're having about where they need to improve. And that's probably the carry away for any Brewers fan. These are the golden days. Let's cherish them while we know they're current.
I completely agree with that. The Brewers, this weekend in a series with the Astros, you can find them. We have them on 6 different civic media stations around the company. So you can listen to them in Wisconsin or even the Upper Peninsula. And pretty much, you can't really go very far in Wisconsin without finding Brewers on the airwaves on one of our civic media stations. Truly the sounds of summer with baseball. And I'm glad we turned the page to June. I think this is when people start getting serious about the standings and where things are kind of going. And that makes me very excited, because, man, I love going to AmFam. I love tailgating and taking my kids to the ballpark and letting them run the bases on Sundays. That's so cool. I never have to do that as a kid. Did you know my first MLB game was 19? I was 19 years old, my first MLB game. My kids got to go when they were one. So they probably don't even have memories of their first game, but they got to go like right away. So I'm always excited for that. We got to wrap up the show, though. Mike Clemens is standing by waiting for us to be quiet, and he wants to talk professionally about sports, and we'll get out of the way for Mike. He's next here on Make the Call on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
One final time for Make the Call here on Civic Media Radio Network. Mike Clemens standing by, the recap of the week in sports. But we are at the end of the program, which is the time we ask ourselves, did we miss anything in the sports world today? And that is what I pose to you, Parker, Gray. Our final thoughts here on Make the Call.
Jimmy, I'll actually jump off of something you mentioned a couple minutes ago. You mentioned that your first Brewer game, I believe it was, or was it your first MLB game, was it you were at 19 years old? And I immediately was thinking, what was mine? I was 13. It was our 8th grade class trip, and I just wanted to share with you the memory, because I bet you guys have one similar. We were watching Brewers versus the Braves. We were sitting pretty close to the front row in the left outfield, and the lady behind me really, really liked the player standing right in front of us, and so she spent the whole game screaming, Ryan, I love you, Ryan. And if you wonder how long a human being can do that, it's at least the length of a baseball game. I could not believe the lungs on that lady. And finally, during the 7th inning stretch, Mr. Braun turned around, looked her in the eye, and gave her a wave. And so she spent the next 2 innings, Ryan, thank you. It's irreplaceable. There's no memory I will ever have that will touch that, for weird, for positive, and the Brewers got the win that day.
Parker, top that.
I can't. I've got nothing on you there. I've been to, I don't remember what my first game was. I think my first Brewer game, I believe it was against the Cubs. Oh, I was probably 7 or 8 or so, sitting very high, not in the first or second row like you were, Greg.
You had the best seat in the house, man.
Yeah, so. That's true. I could see it all from up here. Could see everything from up here. But yeah, I will say real quick that I am going to be turning on the French Open. Yannick Sinner got upset earlier, so the men's game might be a little more open, unless Novak Djokovic wins again. Please don't.
There you go. Those are our final thoughts for the week. My first game, by the way, was actually a Twins game, and it was at the Metrodome. So the Metrodome is always an experience when it existed, especially if you're a fan of unusually sized rodents running around the upper concourse. Anyway, that's my note on my final thoughts this week. Not a great happy thought. But we do have to turn it over to Mike Clemens, who has the weekend review in sports. We turn it over to Mike now. Make the Call, Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great weekend, everybody.
A star player arrested. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with a recap of this week's sports. As OTA practices got underway Tuesday in Green Bay, we learned that the Packers' starting running back, Josh Jacobs, had been arrested on 5 counts of domestic violence, including strangulation and suffocation, which could be tried as a felony. It began last Saturday morning at 8:37 in Hobart, Wisconsin, just west of Lambeau Field, when 911 calls came in.
TMJ4 has learned more about what went down Saturday morning at Jacob's home. Dispatch audio lets us listen in as first responders answered a woman's call for help.
I hear yelling and screaming, things being thrown. It's plotting to this location. We have an open line, possibly a male, female.
A few minutes later, dispatch received a second call about that incident from a concerned next-door neighbor.
Neighbor is calling now saying that her neighbor was assaulted.
Dispatches are later heard saying the man suspected in that assault was not there. He drove away from the home in a Mercedes G-Wagon, but that easily spotted SUV was being tracked with license plate reader cameras.
At this point, we'll want that vehicle stopped if they come across them.
In the end, deputies and an ambulance responded to the call at Jacob's home.
This is something that came to light really Saturday morning into Saturday afternoon, something that police department was looking into, local police in Wisconsin. The Packers have been aware of. Josh Jacobs' lawyers have also been aware of a 3-day trek to get to where we are right here.
Well, I know there's going to be a lot of questions about Josh. I'm going to stick with the statement that we put out as an organization and just let the process play out.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. So we asked, why would the district attorney in Green Bay release Jacobs after police had filed those 5 charges against him the next day? Wisconsin attorney Brent Eisburner.
It's not as uncommon as you might think. Just because you're arrested doesn't mean you're guilty. The police have a different legal standard to arrest somebody. They need to have some sort of probable cause that a crime probably occurred and this person probably committed it. The district attorney, however, has a much higher burden to bring charges. They ethically can't just charge everybody based on the police statements. They need to be able to take this in the court and show beyond a reasonable doubt this individual committed this or these crimes. Do we have enough to charge this individual or not?
Josh Jacobs is valuable to the team. He rushed for over 900 yards last season, scored 13 touchdowns. Despite a knee injury, he is a key weapon on the Packers' offense. The NFL Commissioner's Office, however, is keeping an eye on this case. NFL and former Green Bay reporter Tom Pelissero.
Generally speaking, the Commissioner's exempt list, which is paid leave, is something the NFL applies closer to teams actually being back onto the field. We're in May, the voluntary portion of the offseason. Certainly several months for things to play out. We will be continuing to follow all the developments out of Green Bay.
Packers head coach Matt LaFleur met with reporters before practice on Wednesday.
Matt, as far as football goes, do you have to prepare for the possibility that you might be playing some of the season without him, especially this time of year?
Well, I think a lot's going to happen between now and then.
Matt, how do you feel about that position in general?
Well, I mean, I like the guys that we have, but certainly you can never have enough, that's for sure.
Turning to baseball, the Brewers in Houston this weekend in a series against the Astros. On Friday night, Milwaukee trailed the entire game, then came from behind to win 5-4 in extra innings. The hero? 34-year-old Christian Yelich, who's base running in the 10th inning from second to third and then home plate to score the winning run, manager Pat Murphy.
There's a lot of underrated plays in the game, but those two were great. You know, the fact that he got to third on a short fly ball to center field, and the fact that he scored on a line drive to right, a kid with an incredible arm. Offensively, that won us the game. You know, 12 years in the big leagues, using your legs. Yeah, I know he's an MVP. I know he hit. Did he hit 40 one year? Did he hit 40 homers?
44.
Okay, I know he did that, but there's not many guys that hit 44 and can still run the bases like that.
On Monday, Memorial Day, the Brewers' ace pitcher, Jacob Mizorowski, threw 57 pitches all over 100 miles per hour to set a new major league record and pitched into the 7th inning. I asked the Miz if he's been working on his endurance.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, in the offseason, that was the focus. And, you know, I think it came out better on the other side. So, yeah, I do feel stronger, but nothing crazy.
Did you have fun today?
Yeah, of course. It's always fun. I mean, it's always fun to play baseball. So, no, it was just another day.
Does that number mean anything to you? Is it surprising? Like,
no.
Just another day?
Yeah, that's what I do. I throw hard, so.
That's Brewers pitcher Jacob Mizorowski. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.